Hey, thanks for spending time with me. Rusnowski here. This is Porchlight. Two daring leaps that are involved in creating an item that is handmade. There's all the time and effort and care put into conceiving it and producing it, while knowing you could be doing something else that isn't as hard. Then, if your intention is to create something of substance and quality, there's a very good chance that it will survive you on this earth, and someday, someone might remember you made it and perhaps have a story about how and when that happened. It's nice to be appreciated. Good, honest work, the hand made. Some might even say it brings you closer to your being. Keeping in mind here that Jesus was said to be a carpenter. Despite the lack of any surviving pieces, we can guess that he worked in wood. I wonder what exactly he built. Maybe a wall shelf, or a small stool, or a stirring spoon, or a snath. That would be the long handle on a scythe. Utilitarian, I bet. Likely purchased by folks of limited means living in his hometown. Interesting that for his time here on earth, a carpenter is how Jesus of Nazareth first chose to be known. I'm thinking somehow that just might have helped people trust him a little more.
Sweet silver angels over the sea, please come down, fly and low for me. One time I trusted a stranger because I heard his sweet song, and it was gently enticing me, though there was something wrong. But when I turned, he was gone, blinding me. His song remains reminding me he's a bandit and a heartbreaker. Oh, but Jesus was a cross maker. Sweet silver angels over the sea, please come down, fly and low for me. He wages war with the devil, a pistol by his side, though he chases him out windows and won't give him a place to hide. He keeps his door open wide. So dim, I see the junction get nearer, and danger is in the wind, and either rose looking grim. Hiding me, I flee, desire dividing me. He's a bandit and a heartbreaker. Oh, but Jesus was a cross maker. Yes, Jesus was a cross maker. One time I trusted a stranger because I heard his sweet song, and it was gently enticing me, though there was something wrong. But when I turned, he was gone, blinding me. His song remains reminding me he's a bandit and a heartbreaker. Oh, but Jesus was a cross maker.
Jesus was a cross maker. Old Grandpa wore his suit and dinner nearly every day. No particular reason, he just dressed that way. Brown necktie, matching vest, both his wingtip shoes. He built a closet on a high back porch, put a penny in a burned out fuse. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, he shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Well, he used to sing me Blood on the Saddle and rock me on his knee, and let me listen to the radio before we got TV. Well, he'd drive to church on Sunday, and he'd take me with him too. Stained glass in every window, hearing aids in every pew. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Now my grandma was a teacher, went to school in Bowling Green, traded in a milking cow for a Singer sewing machine. Well, she called her husband Mister, and she walked real tall and proud, and used to buy me comic books after Grandpa died. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war.
There's a nice discovery. Judy Sill, the very first artist signed to David Geffen's Asylum label, recording home to some singer-songwriters you would know, including Jackson Browne, Joni Mitchell, Warren Zevon. Oh, Judy Sill was a ravaged soul. November this year will mark the 40th anniversary of her death. Then John Prine, who was also on Asylum for a brief period, those masters eventually making their way to his recording home ever since, Old Boy Records. Scott Russell Sanders expresses himself in many ways, fiction, commentary, children's books, and that's just writing. Early on, he took to the notion of giving wood new life after its source had stopped living. I'll let him tell it.
My father, late in life, got a job behind a desk, but before that he practiced a number of trades, including carpentry and furniture building. He had learned the rudiments of carpentry as a boy on a farm in Mississippi, and he practiced that carpentry on the houses that we lived in as a family in Tennessee and Ohio. And when I got a little bigger, he got me a small hammer, what's called a tack hammer. Naturally, early on, I would bend the little skinny nails because I couldn't hit them square. And whenever I did that, he would look at it and say, "Well, I must have given you one of those limber nails. Let me give you a stiff one." And the secret of that, which he taught me, is to drive a nail, you don't look at your hand, you don't look at the hammer, you look at the head of the nail. And your body, pretty soon, with practice, will learn how to hit it square. And hitting a nail square, cutting a board square, making a wall plumb, those are all virtues in the world of my father as a woodworker. Even if what you were building didn't show, if it was a hidden part of a cupboard or an inside wall of a house with drywall over it, it was vital that you made the joint square, made the walls plumb, drove the nails clean in. It was an aesthetic about what good workmanship is like. It was also an ethic because he taught me how to treat wood, how to think about wood. He had favorite woods. He loved black walnut. He loved cherry. He loved fruit woods. He loved the grain in wood. Earlier in those childhood years, he used to take me into the woods and introduce me to trees. And he did that literally. He'd have me feel the bark and look at the leaves and see if it had any nuts or berries on it, back off, see the shape of the tree. And then he would say, "Scott, this is red oak. Red oak, this is Scott." He would introduce me just like it was somebody I was meeting in the woods. He regarded trees as creatures that had a dignity and a value just the way people did. In fact, they were more clever than people in some ways because they could get all that they needed right where they were. They didn't have to run all over creation. They would stay right where they were planted, and they would get everything they needed from the soil and the rain and the sun. When I was a teenager, I worked during the summers and weekends for a local builder. When I started, he played it safe and just had me carry 2x4s and 2x8s and 2x12s around and mixing mortar, pulling electrical wire and things like that. But eventually, I learned pretty well how to do almost everything that's involved in building a house, from laying block for the foundation to putting roof shingles on top of the house. That was a great training for me. And gradually over time, I've learned that there's a connection between the way my father taught me to think of tools and to think of wood and to think of carpentry and the way I think about writing, which is my trade. He felt that wood should be respected. It shouldn't be wasted. It should be used honoring the life that was reflected in the grain. He talked about the grain in a piece of wood as the memory of its life. And the strength of wood is a result of having been alive. He taught me how to take care of tools, not to let them rust or get dull. And he taught me that when you build something, make it as firmly and squarely and clearly as you possibly can. And I've tried to do that as a writer. I've tried to do it in other domains of my life. So that apprenticeship in working with wood was an apprenticeship really for a series of attitudes about how to live, how to do good work, how to treat the materials that the earth provides for us. And I learned to pay attention to the tools, to the wood, to what we built out of the wood, pay attention in the way my father paid attention, and how to take pleasure from the shaping of things.
touching was so easy for you. You can't help but say hot dog. Now some call the wood chopping sound. Some call the wood cutting bin. The last girl I cut the wood for, you know, she won't be back again. I'm a cross cut saw. Just drive me across.
First up, Trini Lopez Yes, he did play Linton, Indiana, and I'm sure there's at least one person listening out there who might corroborate this. Then, Albert King, he of the Flying V. I believe his was Cherry Red. Finally, the great Eddie Floyd. Before electronic stud finders, how did you locate the sweet spot behind plaster? Oh, my Uncle Roy used to lay an open palm on the wall and thump the back of his hand like a ripe melon, which probably means he checked the nails in the baseboard. For this postcard home, the postmark reads, Needmore, Indiana. The term handmade can be interpreted in many ways. It helps to set a standard for its common usage. For instance, were more than two hands involved? What about printed instructions? Or does the creation deserve a personal signature? For instance, could there ever be such a thing as a handmade cell phone? Complexity is certainly present in many handmade items, but being able to personally relate to that complexity is part of what makes a creation awe-inspiring. Remember Basil Bennett's story about the 10-year-old who fixed old clocks? Impressive, but still believable. Years ago, on Old State Road 37, near the town of Needmore, Indiana, there was a sign directing prospective visitors to the Brazen Serpent, the creation of a stonecutter from Bedford, August Mack. Mr. Mack's inspiration had come in a dream, and also through his careful reading of the Old Testament. In the book of Numbers, Moses fashioned the very first brazen serpent to protect the Israelites from the bite of the deadly asp. Doubtful that this early prototype featured these specs, though. August Mack's brazen serpent was 21 feet long and weighed over 300 pounds. 362 wooden ribs were overlaid with over 4,000 hand-cut metal scales. Then, hidden inside, a motor that made the huge snake undulate, opening its mouth to reveal a forked tongue. August Mack painted his serpent to resemble the native diamond-backed rattler. It even had a rattle that shook. Definitely worth a quarter a look, and, of course, an extra nickel for his postcard. We know that August Mack died in July of 1947, but where, oh where, is that amazing brazen serpent? Rumors place it in another roadside attraction somewhere in North Carolina. Oh, I do hope so. When it comes to the legend of the brazen serpent, that's the part I'll take on faith.
answer to.
Hey, nice to be with you. You're listening to Porchlight with Tom Rusnowski. Production support for this program comes from Smithville at smithville.com and from Gilbert Construction, remodeling homes since 1994.
What's he building in there? That hook light on the stairs. What's he building in there? I'll tell you one thing, he's not building a playhouse for the children. What's he building in there? What's he building in there? What's he building in there? We have a right to know.
If I were a carpenter, or you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? If a tinker were my trade, would you still find me carrying the pots I made, following behind me? Save my love for sorrow, save my love for lonely. I've given you my tomorrow, love me only. If I work my hands in wood, would you still love me? You answer me quick, Tim, I could. How could you above me? If I were a miller at a mill wheel grinding, would you miss your colored blocks, soft shoes shining? Save my love for loneliness, save my love for sorrow. I've given you my onlyness, given me your tomorrow. If I were a carpenter, you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? could you have my baby?
Tom Waits, and then Tim Hardin, the man who wrote the song, followed by Aretha. Let me get this straight. Jack left her? Sure he did. A small framed portrait, a lighted candle, corner shrine, for one Juliet petal. Handicraft. Something present and practical about that word. Someone manifests their imagination in the material world, and perhaps your paths will cross. You might be able to lift it, inspect it, amazed that one person could actually create this. Often, these objects involve the leap of faith that they will serve a particular function, not appreciated purely for their beauty, but also meant to work, meant to last. Maybe it will survive every one of us who experience it now. And that's okay. Juliet Petal was born in Terre Haute, Indiana, in the last year of the 19th century. As she grew up over the next decade, Terre Haute would grow too, by nearly 60%. In 1910, Terre Haute's population was essentially what it is today, which tells you a lot about Juliet's powerful first impressions. Building and buildings everywhere. Monumental structures like the Vigo County Courthouse, the Union Depot, and St. Benedict's Catholic Church, a mere 20 years old when Juliet was, say, 8. To walk inside them and hear the echo of your footsteps, of your whisper even, surrounded by those grand staircases, the stained glass, the impossibly high ceilings. Actually, You could be describing many of the homes being built around Terre Haute at that time as well. Basic materials, stone, wood, brick, and an abundance of natural light. As a girl, Juliet was spending her whole day in their presence. She attended the private girls' school, King Classical, conducted in the elegantly appointed home of Miss Bertha Pratt King. Juliet was encouraged to follow her dream, even as the way forward remained uncharted. Juliet Peddle became only the second woman to earn a degree in architecture from the University of Michigan. She was the first woman to be licensed in her profession by the state of Indiana. She had recommitted to Terre Haute by then, and sensing that many of the city's finest structures were endangered, set about to photograph and catalog them. And oh, what lovely structures she created herself. Her modernist homes are found throughout Terre Haute. The Topping House on Ohio Boulevard bears her distinctive signature. A bubble skylight, glass walls, tall windows fronting the living room. She also designed Crawford School, which would stand just a few blocks from King Classical. Blueprints, sketches, handicraft. Between the imagining and the construction, redefining what it meant to have a woman's touch in the home.
This is Hoagy's tune, and it's a beloved one, of course. From 1929 comes Rockin' Chair, and Hoagy really did the lyrics here, more or less, put together. There's a stonecutter down in Bedford, I think, that he maybe had inspired him through a poem or something that he had written. But anyway, Hoagy sings Carmichael's, the album on the Pacific Jazz label, with arrangements by Johnny Mandel. It's still in print for another generation to enjoy, and it's in many ways definitive in the terms of Hoagy's interpretation of his own work. So here's Hoagy's own recording of Rockin' Chair.
Rocking chairs got me. Cane by my side. Fetch me that ginseng, for I tan your hide. I can't get from this cabin I ain't going nowhere, ain't going nowhere. Just set me here grabbing, grabbing at the flies round this rocking chair. My dear old Addie Harriet How long in heaven she be? Send me sweet chariot for the end of the troubles I see. Old rocking chair, he gets it, he gets it. judgment day is here. Chained to my old rocking chair.
Often, we have an image of carpenters and craftsmen as independent contractors. But especially in the early years of the Industrial Revolution, many of the most talented of these worked daily in factory settings, justifiably proud of the products they created from their hourly labor. These skills were not the kind one would find solicited in the classified section of the local paper. That is, unless you were searching for a metal engraver in the Elkhart Review or the Elkhart Truth. Elkhart, Indiana, was once home to 60 musical instrument manufacturers, much of it brass horns. Elkhart, like Grand Rapids, Michigan, earned reputations, the band instrument and the furniture capitals of the world, respectively. Workers might start on the factory floor, perfect their trade, and occasionally strike out on their own. The Kahn Instrument Company of Elkhart was the oldest and largest. It employed a young Gus Bisher, not like it's spelled. He quickly advanced to shop foreman and then quietly began building and marketing his own instruments. Bisher trumpets and saxophones would wind up making a huge contribution to the sound of jazz in its formative years. Bandstands in the 1930s and 40s were filled with Bishers. The tenor, alto, and baritone saxes all had a warm, bossy tone that didn't need a microphone to rumble a dance floor. And the model names? Consider the Bisher 400 top hat and cane. As for Bisher trumpets, well, Louis Armstrong played their true tone in the late 1920s. Yeah, it's got to be the shoes. Bisher was actually one of two Hoosier-made products that Louis Armstrong put great faith in. Louis was also a daily consumer of Pluto water from French Lick, Indiana, always stocking up before hitting the road. So one case carries the horn, the other case carries the bottles. Next stop, Evansville.
Middle. Now, folks, undoubtedly you want to know what this is. The idea of this little novelty is to bring you health. It opens the pores, clears the eyes, takes your mind off business worries, and last but not least, brings laughter back into the life of the working man. All you do, folks, is just to blow through the little pipe and attach the cork onto the hook. It's simple. Watch. There you are, folks. But don't take my word for it. Here, try it yourself.
The parting word, A and B, first. Special thanks to a fine barber and a good man, Ted Plue, who the day after his 88th birthday recounted the legend of the brazen serpent for me. He claims to have that postcard lying around somewhere. And also, a favorite story of mine. Many years ago, I was visiting a friend at his home while his 8-month-old daughter was playing with her mother in another room. My friend said, "I want to show you something amazing." The television was on, and he switched the channel to our public broadcasting station. He boosted the volume. "Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood." Fred Rogers was speaking. I don't know what he said exactly, and probably neither did my friend's daughter. But within moments, we heard her crawling down the hall. Pretty soon, she was sitting in front of the television, mesmerized. Just the simple, soothing sound of Fred Rogers' voice could summon an 8-month-old baby. Ooh. "Okay, Fred, we're listening." Quote, "And those handmade presents that children often bring home from school, they have such value. The value is that the child put whatever he or she could into making them. The way parents respond to the giving of such gifts is very important. To the child, the gift is really self. They want so much for their selves to be acceptable and be loved. And so, next time."
Well, it's time for change. I'm tired of that same old saying, same old words, the same old lines, the same old tricks, and the same old rhymes. It's days, precious days, they roll in and out like waves. I got boards to I got planks to nail, I got charts to make, and I got seas to sail. I'm gonna build me a boat with these two hands of lead, fair curve from a noble plan. Let the chips fall where they will, 'cause I sail they're just like wings, and the wind can make them sing songs of life, songs of hope, songs to keep your dreams afloat. I'm gonna build me a boat. Chips fall where they will, 'cause I've got folks to build. Now shores, distant shores, there's where I'm headed for. I've got the stars to guide my way, sailing to with these two hands that'll be
production support for Porch Light with Tom Rusnowski comes from Smithville. Fiber internet, streaming TV, home security and automation in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. And from Gilbert Construction, specializing in restoring, remodeling, and revitalizing Bloomington area homes since 1994. More information about Gilbert Construction by calling 812-876-8110 or on the web at gilbertbuilt.us. Porch Light is engineered by our radio audio director, Mike Pascash. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Visit us at wfiu.org/porchlight.